Everyone got one. What's your opinion? This is the rare room. Tongues won't be bit. Ain't no rules, just spill it. And anybody can get it. No limit. We get to kill it. You tuning into the thrillers. And no, ain't no stopping. No. Any topic, even the random. I hope that you ready. We entering in the zone soon. We on a grown shit. Welcome to the rare room.
That's it. That's all I got to say.
What's up, y'all? I love saying that shit. Like I'm all cool and shit. Look. Shout out, Wilson. What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest, and you guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it street, we keep it opinionate. Oh, I didn't even tell you. So, Trip. I'm all backwards today. So, look, Wilson. On this, no, you can laugh into the fucking mic. Wilson turning his head like he's
a pro. I'm not laughing at you. I am laughing at you.
We silly. We're going to be silly today. So look, we say, you know, people say we keep it 100.
Mm-hmm.
We say we keep it 1,015 sometimes.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to say, I say we keep it street, we keep it opinionated, and we keep it 1,015. So y'all join in with me on 1,015.
Okay.
Word? Yeah. Okay. So in the rant room, we keep it street, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what?
1,015.
Can you count, motherfucker? Can you count?
Yeah. I was hoping we would go like 2015.
Oh, you
since
wanna
it's
do
the
too?
Year.
Oh.
Since it's
oh,
the
that's
year.
Right. That's
you know
right.
All right.
Okay. We'll do it at the end, motherfucker, at the end. So look, on the rant room, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture, but our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft. Today we're gonna say actors and shit, because Gary's an actor too. Shit like that. So today, just so you guys know, I want to give you guys a little heads up. My girl Lisa Bolakaja, my co-host, is on staff on Bitch Flicks, so she's busy doing her shit, but she'll be back soon. She was upset she couldn't be here.
Yeah,
she
I'm trying not to take it personally.
She wanted to hang with you today. Hopefully she'll come toward the end, though.
That'd be great.
Because I want you to meet her. She's funny. So I got my man, Gary. I can never say your damn last
Guerrier
name.
Guerrier like Perrier.
Why you always got to have a fancy ass names and shit?
It's French. It's French.
Where? French Street over there in Compton? Where's that?
No, it's French.
You like France Street or some shit?
We are on Rimpow.
True.
You know.
Okay, I'll let that slide. I'll let that slide. So we got my man Gary here sitting in with the baby rider seat. So I did this thing, Wilson,
mm-hmm.
where when I started, I used to be on another network. I did like 10 episodes on another network before. And then when I started my network, I listened to a lot of shows. And I'm like, if I were just a young writer, what would I want to do? And I was like, well, maybe I'll have a baby writer seat where I'll let a young writer come in and sit with us and just listen to us and get some game.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what the subject is, whatever, they can just learn some shit. And my man lucked out. I'm putting him on the mic today.
Nice.
It's stepping to the thank mic.
You. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Cruz.
I'm going to use my NPR voice today. Hi, thank you for joining us today.
Somehow the queen always comes out.
Look, I can't help it.
This got the
it's my gift to the world.
Okay, look, it's got you this far, bitch. But, okay, so anyway, I'm just like, the silly fuck today. You know, what it is? It's this damn drink I'm drinking.
Oh, is that what it is?
I got the vapors today. Look, there you go. Anyway, so y'all hear him. That's my man over there. That's Gary. Thank you for stepping in for Lisa today.
You're welcome.
And so look, if you guys are grown, let's get it in. So today we got a kick-ass show for y'all. My man, my home team, my cousin, the infamous and shit, like you that cool. Wilson Cruz, y'all, actor. Is you a gay rights activist? Is that what you want to say? What are you?
Sure. I mean, I feel like, you know.
He's like, are you paying me, bitch?
Listen,
okay.
I feel like it's 2015, and if you are a gay man of color alive today, mm-hmm. you are an activist, there whether you want to or not.
Okay. Well said. I'll keep it at that. What else? I know you got some more hyphens.
Singer, mm-hmm. dancer, actor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Broadway.
Human.
That's what's up. So y'all hear him. Wilson Cruz, y'all. Welcome to the show, y'all. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, man. We're trying to get him on the show for a minute. We've been talking about it for like a year, but now
yes.
my man's here.
Well, I was out of town a lot.
Hey, he ain't got no job.
No,
he ain't doing nothing
anymore. I went from two to none.
Okay. They just got rid of it. Just bam. We're going to get into that. First of all, I just got to say, here we are in January. So I'm probably going to drop this in like in a week or two. Happy belated birthday to my man. Oh,
thank you.
Look at him with his grown
self. Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
Still look like he's 16, don't he?
I am 16.
Are you 16? No. When I was 2 years old. Look at him.
It's my 41st birthday. Yes.
Wow. You look amazing. Over.
Thank you. That's why I tell people.
I go, you should see the bitch at the gym. Okay? He be getting an in at the gym. Okay, I'm like, damn, what's the winner? Can I work out with you some shit? I mean,
yes, sure.
Can I get my onesie twosies or some
yeah,
shit?
Yeah, come on. People are like, what's your secret? I said, well, I take care of myself.
There you go. Right. There you go.
And olive oil.
I go, that's just a black thing, bitch. You just can't have that one.
I eat it. I put it on my face. Anyway. Okay. No, I'm kidding.
I'm selling that shit.
Seriously.
I'm telling everybody.
My grandmother used to do that. Mm-hmm. She used to, before she went to bed, she'd put olive oil on her eyes and her cheeks and
skin was just glistening.
She was. She was gorgeous till the day she died.
Okay.
Crazy.
Y'all hear
she
that?
Was gorgeous.
Y'all writers didn't even know y'all gonna get that game in here today. Mm-hmm. Look, so when you show up to your meeting, bitch, face just be beat, don't it? Just perfect, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Seriously.
Word up, word up. So as you guys hear, we got my man Wilson Cruz here. Yes, we're gonna be really silly today. And so let's just go into a little bit of background. Where you from? How you got into the game?
So I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York.
Mm-hmm. Brooklyn.
I come from, my parents are Puerto Rican. Mm-hmm. I'm Puerto Rican. I come from a long lineage of Puerto Rican ancestry. Mm-hmm. We moved from Brooklyn to Michigan, and then from Michigan to California.
Funny,
because
I moved
California.
From Michigan to Brooklyn.
Oh, really?
That's funny.
Wow, that's weird. Nobody does that.
So, can you believe it?
And then we came to California when I was in my teens. Mm-hmm. And so I consider myself a New Yorker, but I am a transplant to L.A. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, growing up, the fact that I you know, lived in these very different places in the country, mm-hmm. Helped me understand people a little bit more.
Absolutely. He's more worldly.
And at least different climates at the very least.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And when you move a lot when you're a kid, I think you encounter a lot of people from different backgrounds. Sure. And
let me just ask you, what made you guys move around? Was pops in the military or something?
No,
or what?
My parents, you know, were young. My parents were 19 when they had me, and they had three kids by the time they were 27,
mm-hmm.
which I
oldest?
Can't even imagine. I'm the oldest. Mm-hmm. And I think they were just looking for a better life for their kids, sure. right? And they had grown up in Puerto Rico and New York, and they were like, we don't want to raise our kids here. We want something better for them. And so mm-hmm. they were out in search of that and more opportunity. It was the early 80s, and they were, you know, they were looking for work.
Sure.
And I don't know, I think that, you know, growing up, I was encountering a lot of different people from different backgrounds and different lives, and it was a catalyst for my imagination.
Sure.
And I think I always considered myself a performer of some form or another, and I was always performing in some way or another, whether that be through the public education system, mm-hmm. where I played three instruments, or I was in a choir, or I was part of the theater
would
department.
You play like saxophone or some shit?
Sax, clarinet,
okay,
flute.
You better do it.
Yes, wow. I did. Always a woodwind player. And I'll leave it at that. And so, you know, I think I... There was no denying, you know, early on that's mm-hmm. where I was
something artistic. In some
yeah.
Way. Now, you know, did you always know you could sing, or did you develop that?
No, I didn't know that I could sing. I thought, you know, I would sing by myself. I would like hope
sing
that
a new edition
sing.
And shit.
Right. And I think, you know, I was always a musician. I was I was a musician pretty early on, and through that, I think I discovered that, you know, I could hold a tune, and then. Okay. Through the public education system in high school and junior high school, mm-hmm. I had great music teachers and choir teachers, and mm-hmm. that's where it started. And then I started to study more seriously after college.
Because you were doing some theater when you were a kid.
Yeah.
Children's theater and shit
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, I mean, in high school and yeah. community college, mm-hmm. I was a major, my major in college at Cal State San Bernardino was theater and English. I mm-hmm. thought I was going to be a theater teacher.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Because in the state of California, you can't get your teaching accreditation in theater, you have to have it in something else, and then you can become a teacher of theater. So I was going to be an English teacher who taught theater. That was what I thought I was going to do. Mm-hmm. And then ABC came calling. So
they just knocked on the door, didn't
right. they?
They
were like, hey, we need a little homosexual.
You would never be.
So anyway, so yeah, long story short, I guess, was mm-hmm. that I always knew that this is what I was going to do, okay. and it felt like a calling, and it still feels like a calling. Mm-hmm.
So you said, I'm be interrupting you a lot.
Yeah,
so
please.
Forgive me. So you said Guide ABC me. Came.
Yes.
Rocking. So what show was that?
So in 1993, I auditioned for my very first pilot.
Oh, really?
I had had an agent for 3 years at that point, mm-hmm. and... I'd commercial agent, and mm-hmm. I'd done theater, but I hadn't really done the whole TV thing. Okay. I had done a guest spot on a series on Fox called Great Scott.
That's Great Scott.
Yeah, that starred Tobey Maguire, actually.
I'll do it.
Okay. Yeah. Another short-lived series, which is a running theme in my career. Starting to feel like the Grim Reaper. Like if I'm on it, it's over. But anyway, so that was how I got my SAG card. And the following pilot season was, I was presented with the script called My So-Called Life. And I went through that process. And
okay. Historic.
Beginner's luck.
Historic.
Really. It was historic. It was, you know, I really believe that that old adage that, mm-hmm. you know, if you prepare yourself, you know, preparation, matched with opportunity equals success.
Absolutely.
And so I felt like I had, even though I was 19 years old, that mm-hmm. I had been preparing to play that part for about 19 years. And
'cause it felt like you know, you can tell when motherfuckers are acting. I just remember being moved by somebody who was like me, and mm-hmm. they were young because we're close to the same age. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit older, motherfucker. I'm 44, but I just remember being moved by that, seeing somebody who looks like me, if you will. You know, he pretty to me, but he looked like me, motherfucker. He looked like me. You know what I mean? He looks like me.
I do know what you mean, and I know what you mean because I was moved. Mm-hmm. by the fact that someone who looked like me was going to play this role because I would have loved to have had that for myself.
Yeah.
And to have had the opportunity to be that for mm-hmm. someone else was incredibly moving for me. You know, it came with a sense of responsibility. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to sit here and be like, I didn't feel the weight of that. Mm-hmm. But also at the same time, it was incredibly fun. Mm-hmm. It was incredibly cathartic. And I've said this in the past, to be able to walk through that experience again of being a gay teenager mm-hmm. in high school and to use that experience and leave it there and walk away from it.
Okay.
And whatever that pain was or that experience was or the vulnerabilities or...
because you had some really dramatic moments on there at times and it was...
Yeah. And you know, this is another running theme in my career, which I think is helpful to talk about, is I don't know that Ricky was supposed to be as much of an integral part of that series as he ended up being.
You think in the pilot you just stood out a lot? You think it would?
If you go back and watch the pilot, that character is really in service of
Claire.
Not even Claire.
Oh, yeah.
Of Rayanne. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
He is there to. I mean, I think he actually, if I remember correctly, when in the description of the character, they actually said he was Rand's sidekick. You know, you have Claire, and Claire is the main character, and then she has a supporting actress who's playing her best friend, and so I'm a supporting character. Mm-hmm. And I think something happened in that pilot. They, you know, Winnie saw something, and Scott Winant and Marshall and Ed saw something that intrigued them, and they wanted to go there.
Okay.
I mean, they knew he was going to be a part of the show. He was a series regular. It wasn't like he was like a recurring guest star. But I think he ended up being more central than they figured. Okay. And that was really exciting to see happen. And I think, and you know, you're to go back to your point, which is a lot of that came from the fact that Winnie and I became close. Ashley became close with many of the actors on the show. But, you know, I think she was intrigued by my own personal story and drew inspiration from that. And whereas it wasn't you know, verbatim, my experience, I think it inspired her storytelling. And I think she saw that I was willing to go there and wanted to go there and felt compelled to really go there. Because I remember saying to her at the audition, actually, my very last audition for her before I went to pilot.
Well, let me back you up. Since we have a lot of actors on, and I got my man sitting in with us, what was the what was the process like for you doing the audition? How many steps did you have to go through before you got the call saying, you know, you got the part?
Well, you know, auditioning for a pilot, it's like it's rigorous. It's a rigorous process. You know, especially for an unknown actor.
Sure.
I read for Mary Goldberg's assistant, and then I read for Mary Goldberg herself, the casting director, and then the casting director, Mary, brought me in to meet with Winnie.
Okay.
And then Winnie brought me in to meet with Marshall and Ed.
Okay.
And then...
Okay, wait for it.
Right. And then I read for the network. Oh, and in the end, the network has the final say. That being said, I think that the network, because of their history with Marshall and Ed and Winnie, were going to go with who they, what you know, okay. their
they trusted them,
their instincts, and you know, I remember who you know they brought two of us to audition for Ricky and.
You don't have to say who that person is. Is he still working?
He's actually I see him all the time. Okay, he's a great.
Sometimes a motherfucker make it, and the other motherfucker.
He's a great actor, and we talk about it all the time. And he, you know, he's lovely. He was the first one to say, you know, that was. And this is the lesson. This is a good lesson for actors: is you're going to get the part that's yours, right? And sometimes it's just about going through that process. For the other person, right? Yeah. About learning that process of about being in front of those people. Absolutely. And then something comes out of that. But if it's your job, it's your job. And there's no need for the backbiting or the jealousy or the envy. You know, I'm friends with, I would say, most of the people. When I go to an audition, I see the same people. And it's like, you know, reunion time. Sure. Hey, Jay, how you doing, boo-boo? You know what I mean? Or Wilson Heredia or, you know, Alec Mappa or whatever it is. You know, it's like we all bring something differently. So it's whatever they need in that in that moment for that part. And so anyway, you know, that's the way I look at it. And so if...
But it takes the pressure off you, though, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it
because,
should.
You know, I'm a firm believer that you know, my treasure is already there. It's just about me being willing and able to go pick it up, right?
See, and being, some more games.
And,
there you go.
Yeah, okay. And being available to it, right? And being open to it and being grateful for the opportunity, whenever it is. And sometimes the opportunity is just being in front of those people because they're going to remember you and bring you back.
Well, let me tell you, since we're talking to actors today, from somebody who's... Are you starting to produce? I know you keep talking about you going to do it. You need to get into the shit.
Well,
this is why we need to talk.
Yes.
But look, because look.
Yeah, the answer, the short answer to the short answer to that question is yes.
Cool, cool. Let me give you guys some game. All right. From somebody who was a former actor myself, who is now on the other side, you know, sitting there watching the casting, seeing you guys come in. listen to me, kids. I'm telling you. Every actor, and I don't care if you beg a casting director, you need to sit in and read for them and see what the actors are doing. And I know you can relate to this because you've been lucky enough to land tons and tons of jobs. The person, you guys hear this all the time, the person who comes in the room with the job walks in the fucking door. Yeah. Just walks in. I'm like, oh, they got the part.
Yeah.
They haven't read fucking shit. There's just an aura. It's a confidence. There's something about them. They come in the door, and believe me, every motherfucker that comes in, we're hoping that's them.
Right.
People think, oh, they just don't like us or they were rude to us or whatever. It's like, no, motherfucker, we want everybody to walk in the door to get the part. Now, where I'm going with this is just to piggyback on what you were saying, I always suggest to actors, when you go into an audition, go into that audition to do what you were just kind of starting to say. Go in there to prove to these casting directors, I might not be good for this one, but y'all motherfuckers gonna be like, this dude was so, we gotta find something for him. And it'll take all the pressure off you. You know what I mean? You won't be in there the whole time going, this is me, this is perfect for me.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Yeah. I can't tell you, you know how many times. I mean, I've been doing this now for over 20 years. And so I have met with most every casting director or, the heads of each casting department at each network, every network now, because now there are more than three. When I started, there were three. But anyway, I can't tell you how many times I did not get the job they called me in for. Mm-hmm. And then I will get a call and be like, this, we want him for this, and it'll be
we want to save you for some.
It'll be a straight offer sometimes, right? It'll just be like, he wasn't right for that, and you hear it all the time when they call back and they're like, it just wasn't the right fit, but we're gonna find something for him, and you think that's just that's bullshit, and it's happened.
True,
Shonda Rhimes. There's a good example. Shonda Rhimes. I went in for Grey's Anatomy. I don't know. Five times for different roles, never the right fit.
Okay.
I moved to New York because I hadn't been working for a couple of years. And I was like, I'm going to go and find me a play. I think I was in New York 3 months. I got a call from my agent. You need to come back to LA.
That a bitch.
Shonda just offered you a role on Grey's Anatomy. I didn't read for it. Nothing. They just knew who I was. Mm-hmm. And they were like, we don't even need, we know he's going to do this. Mm-hmm. And I did do it.
Because I'm going to tell you, as a producer, sometimes you're looking for a Wilson Cruz type.
Right.
So like, motherfucker, can we get Wilson? Can we afford Wilson?
Well, that's funny because my manager will act, sometimes it'll be in a breakdown and it'll say, a Wilson Cruz type. And my manager will call and say, well, he's available.
Have you called me first, Angela?
Right. Like, where did you think I went?
Okay.
I'm still here, damn it. Yes. So I don't know how we got off on that tangent.
That was interesting. Well, we were just, trying to find out the insights on, for the actors who are listening, the process.
Oh, yeah. I think on My So-Called Life, for instance, I don't think he was originally supposed to be as much of the show. That was my first job.
Mm-hmm.
In my last job, I can tell you, because you can talk to Margaret about it when you speak to her, I don't think Kenji on Red Band Society was supposed to be as much of part of the show as he ended up being.
Okay.
He was, again, the funny guy who got to be sassy around Octavia. I think they ended up seeing that I was having fun. I was having a blast. And here's the key for the writers.
Mm-hmm.
I see my work as part of a puzzle, right? And that's what I love about TV and about film, really about all of them, is that there are a team of people, right? And my job as an actor is to find out what is my job in this script.
Okay.
What is it that this character is supposed to, what piece of the puzzle is he supposed to fill?
Mm-hmm.
In Red Band, we were dealing with young people who were dealing with life-threatening diseases, and a hospital staff that was dealing with that. That can be heavy shit.
Sure.
It can be a lot for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
My job was to create the space for the audience to go there. Hmm. And what I mean by that is I was hilarious.
Yeah.
And I needed to be hilarious so that when it got serious, they weren't overwhelmed or exhausted by all of the seriousness that came through it. Now, did that mean that he was only ever going to be funny? No, I had some moments, and I had to find them.
Yeah, because the episode, one of my favorite ones, the one where she decided to sing. And you guys were like, you can't sing.
Right.
Whatever, blah, blah, blah. But there was a moment she started singing and your shift that you did on screen was beautiful. That was just a moment where I was like, okay, my boy is in it right now.
And can I tell you, that was not in the script.
Really?
It was something that happened in the moment.
Hmm.
And I remember it happening, and the producer coming up to me, Jason Ensler, saying, wherever you are, keep going there.
Okay.
They didn't even know that's what they wanted.
Because you were on the verge. You was like right on the edge. You know
right.
What I mean?
And I don't think Kenji was the kind of guy who's going to just break down and cry. Sure. But I think he is the kind of person who is allowed to be moved, especially when it had something to do with Nurse Jackson, who was somebody who meant a great deal to him.
Sure, sure.
So that happened in the moment, you know? And that's your job as an actor, is what is your role here, and how do you fill that role, but also how do you go beyond what's been asked for? And because you know this person better than anybody. Someone else is writing it, but what are you bringing to it that's making it three-dimensional? Sure. Right? They're writing 9 characters probably in this series. It's hard to make everyone three-dimensional. I think as an actor, they're depending on you to infuse it with the Holy Spirit.
Absolutely. Especially on a series. Because you can't put the whole kitchen sink in. You got to let it spread over the 13 episodes. You know what I mean? So for you as an actor, you have to dissect, like, where can you fill up space?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or find it in the moment like you did. You just happen to... Yeah, go ahead.
And sometimes it's be funny. You know what I mean? They wrote you a funny scene. Don't be mad that you're in a drama and that you have to be funny. They need you to be funny.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
The puzzle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think they saw that, to go back to my point, is they saw, okay, we need this. So let's continue. I was originally only supposed to be guaranteed 6 episodes. I ended up doing far more than that. Because I gave them something they didn't even know they wanted or needed. And that's my job, right?
He didn't mention the fact he has scene stealer too. That sometimes that helps.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You're like, who's this bitch? Who is this bitch keep stealing the scene? Damn, we gotta put him in next week, don't we?
It's funny that you said it. Now I can talk about it. But I think it was like one of the episodes that's about to air, one of the last ones, I'm in a scene with Dave Annabelle and with Rebecca Rittenhouse, and they're having this moment, right? And at the very end of it, I come in and say something funny. And and Dave hadn't even looked at the scene. We're like going through reading it, and we read through the scene before we start blocking it. And he goes, wait a minute. We're going to go through all these 3 pages, and then she's going to come in here and be funny and steal the whole scene. No, I'm not having it.
That's
and
hilarious.
He was joking, of course. But they come to depend on you for that, right? But I think that's my job. I think your job is to look at the puzzle, see the beauty in it, and see what your part is, and make it three-dimensional.
Now, see, that's
very profound.
Absolutely.
Really
see,
is.
That's a tone thing. They're letting you know, we can have a dramatic moment, but this is kind of a dramedy. We have to have an element. The whole scene cannot last as a drama.
Right.
Somewhere in there, you have to put in a little bit.
You
need a button. You need somebody to come in and change the tone.
It's like life.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, we don't go through our lives crying and...
Well, I don't know. Something. Just be,
woe is me all the time. And we don't go through our lives laughing.
True.
Guffawing the whole time. You know, there's a balance. You know, it's how we get through. Right? So I think you need that in your work as well. Those are the jobs that I have the most fun in, right?
Sure.
Not, you know, this is the most, you know, this is a very dramatic moment in the piece and, you know, it's about crying. I'm like, no, the scene is not about crying. The scene's never about the crying.
No.
Is what I tell my actor friends. It's never about the crying. The crying happens. The actors put so much pressure on themselves to find some water fall out of their eyes. I cannot tell you how many times I have watched a performance and seen somebody crying their eyes out and not believe
nothing.
A piece of it.
Nothing.
That it was all about getting that water in their eyes. And I don't care about the water. What I care about is, did that person connect to the other person in that scene
Sure.
and create the moment that was asked for?
Well, because we all know it's way more powerful for an actor to be on the verge of tears than to actually have a tear.
And here's the thing. If you do that, mm-hmm. if you create the moment and the connection with the other person in the scene, mm-hmm. the tears will probably come.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Demi Moore and Ghost, okay, that bitch just worked that one. Just yeah. bow. I right. was like, that bitch is real too, wasn't she?
You think, I tell people all the time, do you think that Denzel Washington sat mm. there and thought about having one single tear mm-hmm. fall out of his eye mm-hmm. when he was being whipped in glory?
Mm-hmm. No.
No. Mm-mm. He was infused with the spirit of thousands of,
right.
of his descendants. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's what you hear him talk about it. He wasn't thinking about that. No. He was so connected to that moment mm-hmm. that it didn't matter mm-hmm. what happened. Whatever it was that happened in that moment was going to move us because yeah. it was honest. Well, it just happened that it was a tear.
Because I teach,
powerful tear.
Yeah, because I teach, and I always teach writers not to actually say that your character's crying. I always say it's okay for them to be on the verge, that their eyes are welling, because what happens is, and maybe it's just me thinking from when I was an actor, but a lot of it is me being a producer and seeing actors come in when a writer has written them to somebody, and they're all trying so hard to get to this place, and then that one person comes in and they're like, I'm not going to do that, I'm just going to play this straight, and I'm like, that's the bitch who got the role.
What is his name? He's a mm-hmm. Great actor. He's also a tap dancer. That's what I'm connecting to right now.
What's he on? Black dude, white dude?
White dude, older dude.
Oh!
Oh, it's driving me crazy.
He was Willem Dafoe? Not Willem Dafoe.
No, he was just in...
He's an amazing dancer, tap dancer.
Yes.
Too, old, and the father of someone as well.
Was he just in the Peter Pan movie, playing the hook?
Yes,
playing
the
hook?
Peter Pan.
Yes.
Oh, what I'm talking about.
What's his name? It's driving me crazy.
Oh, this is embarrassing.
Anyway.
Yes.
I was listening to an interview... And somebody's going to be real mad listening to this. And I don't mean to disrespect. I'm having a brain fart.
God, he's in everything, too. I can't remember.
Well, look him up while you have a computer in front of you. But let me tell this story. So he was in an interview, somebody asked him. I think it was an Inside the Actor studio. Mm-hmm. And somebody asked him about what his prep process is and all of that. And he said the very first... Christopher...
Walken.
Thank
it.
You. Woo. Okay. I'm saved. The first thing he does when he gets a script mm-hmm. is he blacks out all of the stage directions.
Mm.
All of them.
I've heard of a few people who do that.
Anything that says, you know, he cries here or, you know, whatever describes the emotional moment of that scene, he will cross it out and black it out because he's like, if it's written well, mm-hmm. if the scene is written well, you don't need to tell me that that's what's happening. It's going to happen in the scene.
Sure.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't happen, then that's not what the scene was about.
Hmm. That's right.
Right? So why put on this false
facade?
Facade of what the scene is. Write the scene. Write what the scene is. Mm-hmm. And if you hire the right two actors, that scene is going to be what it is.
Sure. So, we silly. Yes, we're back. We're back. We're acting a fool. We had to interrupt that little moment there. My girl, Lisa Bolakaja, everybody, she just stepped in the door.
Child, I was flying down that freeway.
For what? Why is somebody here?
No. Yes! Melissa Cruz is here.
You know about it. Who's that?
This somebody. I've That's been my watching cousin. His career for like forever.
Because he's old as dirt.
No.
He just turned 41.
Like, you're looking like you're 12 up in here. Don't Shut he? Up. Yes, I'm just flying down from work. You know, everybody knows my day job. I run an outdoor science school. So I teach little sixth graders outdoors in the mountains, in the wilderness. And today was Friday. So today we have our line dancing. So we packed our bag. No, look, we Cute. Packed our bags. And then we like... clear out the dining hall. Mm-hmm. We put the speakers up. We was throwing down. And I, you know what, people, I'm disturbed. You guys don't let your children dance anymore.
They don't. They just
Child,
stiff, don't they?
Look, I mean,
I go,
like,
we could twerk, but that ain't no dancing, bitch.
Like, what do you people do anymore? Like, children are supposed to dance. So it took a little longer. No, we taught them the dances. Like, we show it to them, but it took a while. Child, come on, electric slide. Everybody should have that encoded
you know
in
what?
Their DNA.
You are not a human being until you know. First of all, what are you going to do at a wedding?
I, Okay. Really?
Stand in the corner.
Lying to us and makes the world go around like that. Well, some of them, thank God.
Get your back up off the wall.
Yeah. Thank God someone knew how to do the Cuban shuffle. Thank God they knew that. Yeah, but it was like the basic dancing and moving. And it was, but some of them were really good. And some of them were just, hey, so people, let your babies dance.
That's what's up. So, that's Lisa Bolicaja, y'all.
It. Movement arts. I love
you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So we were talking with Wilson, just to bring you up to par. We were just talking about my so-called life. And we just kind of jumping around, just having a ball, just talking about shit.
I think, my so-called, it was the first time I ever saw you on TV at all.
That was basically the first time I was on TV.
I'm sure you were doing
I was telling them earlier, I had done one thing. I had done a recurring role on a series called Great Scott, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because when I saw that show, like, it was... My so-called life, I don't know if y'all know this, at the time, because TV has changed so much, but it was one of the most realistic depictions of, like, teenagers. Like, I loved every single character on there. When they had Wilson on there, I was, like, so happy. I was like, oh, my God, who is this person? So I've been following you a long time.
Well, I was telling them, it was the first time I saw somebody who looked like me playing a gay character who was open, who was confident, you know, all that.
Well, he got there. Yeah, he got there eventually. And, that was the point, was we wanted to show somebody who... clearly was not in their body or confident or owning who they were, right? And in 19 episodes, we managed to get him, I don't know how we did it, to get him to a point where he was, right? And you, even at, you know, as short-lived as that series was, I think when it ended, you knew that Ricky was on his way.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. He was going to be all right.
He's going to be all right. And look, I got chills. Okay. That's what that was my whole point, right? Yeah. That was what we wanted to convey.
You did
that. Yeah, you did that. Because even back then, I was working, I've always been working with children, but I always worked in education. And one of the things we're dealing with now is because, I mean, I know a lot of people heard about the Lila Alcorn situation and just a lot of stuff. And one of the problems now is we have such a... I don't know. We have such a strong binary on how children are supposed to be, and we are stifling so much creativity. We're crippling so many children. And when that show came out, I was working at a performing arts school in San Diego, and it was like one of the most eye-opening shows, because I'm going back to work going, you kids, you gotta watch the show. You gotta watch. Especially my babies who were like my who were just discovering themselves. Some of them weren't even coming out yet. Sure. Some of them were like, if I say anything to anybody, they're gonna kick me out of my house. So it's kind of like that one little show was like, even though it was like a small character, it was such a big character for so many of my little babies back at SCPA, San Diego School of Creative Arts. But it was like, please watch this show. And like you said, even though it was short-lived, you can't even imagine what a huge impact that show had on so many people, you know, especially my young babies.
I always forget that it. Yes. I thought it was on for seasons.
That's how powerful it was.
Well, it was 19 episodes, but we were canceled.
Bitches.
But
I know they were
you know, MTV picks it up right away, and then it was like on a loop over there, because it was before they had any. Original programming. I think all they had was like The Real World, and so it was us and The Real World and music videos.
Right. So they didn't know. They didn't know how to handle that scripted show.
And then after that, it was like, you know, on different networks, and then it was on Netflix for years. And anyway, so
Go
so that's
it.
Why.
If it's on Netflix, you guys need to go.
I don't think it's on
that.
Anymore. I know, but there's a box set. You can still get the box set, Boobies. And please do, because I still get 25 cents.
Okay.
Look. Okay.
You know, I got laundry to do.
He got to go to the laundromat.
All right, please, come on. Let's keep it real.
So, and we were starting to talk a little bit about your show. You know what I mean? So we can get into that a little bit.
About the Red Band?
Yeah, about the Red Band.
Yeah.
We can talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So how did you get the show? What happened?
Oh, so I auditioned for...
let me preface that, because before you came in, we were talking about sometimes you offered a few jobs. Right. So I just didn't know they gave it to you.
Well, you know, I should go back. I left the industry, not really left, I stepped back a bit for a couple of years. Mm-hmm.
You went back home?
To work at GLAAD.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And so I was acting as national spokesperson for GLAAD and raising money for them. And really, I should say, the reason why I took that job was I saw an opportunity for me to walk into offices that I would never, as an actor, be invited to.
Right. Mm-hmm.
To have conversations about diversity that I would never be allowed to have as just an actor, right?
Sure, sure.
But, you know, they gave me a little title and and shit, and I felt cute.
Because you guys came to the Writers Guild and talked to us.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I you know, executive offices at NBC that I didn't even know existed.
Okay.
And
yes,
and ABC, and you know, spoke to people like Nina Tesler and on. And had real conversations about why it's important to mm-hmm. have a diverse mm-hmm. Cast on your show mm-hmm. And tell diverse stories.
Sure.
Anyway, all of that to say, so I wasn't really auditioning at all. I didn't have the time. I really had a 9-to-6 job that had me traveling across the country a lot.
Mm-hmm. All kind of award shows and shit. I sent you.
Yes.
I got the videotape.
And, you know, I was appearing on, I was being asked to be on CNN and on MSNBC mm-hmm. to talk about whatever, you know, daily drama there was in the LGBT community at the time, which was a learning experience on its own. And I loved every moment of it, to mm-hmm. be honest with you. But, you know, I'm still an artist at heart. And I was like, you know, after 2 years, I was mm-hmm. like,
I'm feeling a little light today.
You know, and they GLAAD was looking for a president. When they hired a president, mm-hmm. I was like, you know, I think I did it.
Yeah.
You know, I think now I have to hand it over mm-hmm. and let her do
it. He passed
the
Dutch even the left hand side. Like.
And I'm still work with them. I'm not walking away completely. Anyway, all of that to say, so I got this audition for the show mm-hmm. and you know, it was like, you know, you saw what was in the, you know, in the mm-hmm. pilot. The character was barely in the pilot. I really, like I said earlier, don't think they ever planned for him to be as much of a part of the show as he became.
But I mentioned that he has seen still and he know it.
I don't know what you're talking about. So anyway, I auditioned. Come to find out, Margaret, mm-hmm. I knew that Margaret had written the pilot. And Margaret was our science teacher on My So-Called Life. Mm-hmm. She was
right.
a recurring character on mm-hmm. early on in My So-Called Life. And we had stayed in touch for years. Mm-hmm. And so when I got the audition, I didn't call her up and be like, hey, girl, I'm coming in for your show. I just went in, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Because I had other stuff going on and I went in. And apparently Cammy Patton, who... cast the pilot called mm-hmm. Margaret and said, guess who came in today for Kenji? And Margaret was like, who? And Cammy said, oh, Wilson Cruz came in. And Margaret was like, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. Send everybody home. Just give it to Wilson.
What?
She was like, he was really great. And she was like, I know. I'm just... So, and you can ask her about it. She was
funny.
Like, she just was mortified. And I was like, I didn't expect, you know, Margaret Nagel to be like, I got a role for you on my show.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it happened.
Okay.
Yeah. And then... You know, once we did the pilot and I got picked up, they ABC, who produced the show, made a deal for me to do at least 6 episodes, and that's how it all came out. But you know, it wasn't really fleshed out. I think Octavia and I decided who he was pretty like on the first scene.
Oh,
we were
really?
Like, we knew who these people were to each other. Mm-hmm. We had decided pretty early on that they had a long history and mm-hmm. who they were to each other and. It's very cool. I will say this, which was an awesome experience, was once we knew we were going to series, Margaret brought me into the writing room.
Oh, really?
And so I met with all of the writers. And it was so awesome as an actor to mm-hmm. sit there and talk to them and have them ask me who I thought he was.
Wow. So they could add that in.
And luckily... I had done all of that work already, and like you know,
you're like, let me get
my character bible.
Right.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, basically, I was like, this is how I think he came to this hospital. Okay. This is who I think, this is who Octavian I think he is mm-hmm. To who they are to each other, and why he does this, and who he is to these kids, and you know, I had fleshed this out. Whether or not they were going to use all of that is
sure.
not important. What's important is that. I was able to have that conversation
okay. yeah.
with the writers.
Because it's that subtext. Because even
right.
though they have a lot of backstory that we don't see,
mm-hmm.
you're bringing that energy to that performance.
Yeah.
So when you see it, you know there's some other levels
Absolutely.
Going on that scene.
Yeah, and there was stuff that, you know, I think we were going to get to had we been given the opportunity. By the way, we were canceled 2 days ago.
Bitches. I said it.
Well, no one lets shows find their audience. Like, everything
Nobody.
Is like, you got to be blowing up in two episodes. And that's
Stupid.
It. Like,
but here's
really?
The thing. You know, we did find an audience.
Mm-hmm.
It was a loyal audience.
Mm-hmm.
Were they watching the show live? No.
No,
and that's the problem.
I'm guilty of that because I was DVRing
no.
it too, so I feel
I mean, I understand that. But I think that the industry mm-hmm. as a whole is in this moment where they're trying to figure out the value okay. of viewership within 3 to 7 days to 30 days.
Sure,
what
sure.
is the value mm-hmm. to a network and its advertisers when a viewer watches the show mm-hmm. outside of the live okay. airing? And it's really unfair to the shows that are on the air right now because I don't know that the network has figured out, oh, it's worth this much to us. And I'm talking about dollars,
right?
You know, eyes on advertising. Mm-hmm. What did that mean? Mm-hmm. All of that. But we had a young, loyal, incredibly passionate audience.
Absolutely.
And it was growing, I feel. Mm-hmm. So I implore, and I know, you know, who am I? But
Austin Cruz,
I implore the networks and advertisers to take a look at these numbers mm-hmm. and figure out come to terms with how important these numbers are,
right?
Right? Or find a way to monetize it.
Right.
Yeah, for God's sake.
Because we were in a creative industry. Mm-hmm. Let's be creative mm-hmm. about how we place value on sure. viewership.
Sure.
I by no means feel it was a failure at all. Mm-hmm. I think there were, you know, I'm still hearing from people who are very upset about it. So,
yeah.
You know, at the very least, and this is what this has been my mantra, it has reintroduced me to people after a few years okay. of mm-hmm. doing my activism. And
mm-hmm. It puts you back on the map.
Right. And people are like, oh, right, that bitch is funny. And,
but, scene, you know, stealer. Right.
if a scene is written to be stolen, it is my job
get
to steal it.
It is my job to steal.
Who am I to deny the audience and the writer who wrote it?
Word.
The opportunity to have the scene mm-hmm. stolen.
And you know what? If you're a good actor, you mm-hmm. want somebody who's going to bring it
yes.
because it's going to force you to bring something back mm-hmm. at them.
And mm-hmm. Octavia would literally roll out the red carpet for me. She mm-hmm. was like, yes, boo, do you go okay. there?
Go ahead, Octavia.
You know what I mean? Uh-huh. All of them were. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but you know, speaking of activism, I don't view my work as an LGBT activist and my work as an actor or a performer that much differently. I actually feel...
Explain that.
Well, you know, when I look at a role, mm-hmm. right, most of them, all of them at this point have been... I've been playing a gay man, right?
Okay.
And that portrayal and being in people's homes mm-hmm. on television or being in an intimate space in a theater mm-hmm. With them, with an audience, allows me to be for some people who don't even know a gay man, mm-hmm. For them to walk out of that theater or turn off their television now knowing somebody mm-hmm. who is gay, mm-hmm. right?
Okay. Love
you
that.
Can know, yeah. Yes. You can no longer, mm-hmm. if I'm on a show you are watching, mm-hmm. you can no longer say, that you don't know a gay person.
Say that.
Wow.
Right? And that was, that is also how I viewed my work asking the networks for more of that opportunity.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Right? It wasn't just about, oh, Wilson needs a job. It was, let's have more people of color who are LGBT.
Right.
Let's have more women.
Thank you.
Let's have more young people.
Right.
Let's have more older people
yes.
who are LGBT. Let's talk about people living with HIV.
Sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. You know, there's a place for documentary, for that kind of storytelling, mm-hmm. but there's also a place for fiction. Mm-hmm. And fiction has an ability to touch somebody's heart. And with all of the picket signs and the yelling and the screaming and the legislation in the world, mm-hmm. you can change the laws.
Absolutely.
But the only way you can change a person's heart is if you make them feel something.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And that is the place, that's where art comes in.
That's mm-hmm. right.
And if you're doing it right, mm-hmm. you can entertain someone and educate them at the same time.
That's
and so my work as an actor and my work as an activist really go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. And so I see them as the same job in okay. many ways. Now, does that mean that, you know, the characters I play are sitting there, you know, lecturing people? Mm-hmm. No. Yeah. It's allowing people to see me and my experience or the experience of people I know, to let them see that and experience it through that okay. piece of work. And that to me is well, is let me, also let me ask activism.
You, do you feel, because I know you're offered a lot of parts, right?
Well, I get offered a lot of auditions for parts,
okay.
yes.
Okay. Cool. Uh-huh. Do you find yourself saying no
yes.
to a lot of them because they're not representing what you want to see, or what do you think?
No, that's not why I say no to things. Okay. I say no to things if I don't think I can fix them. Mm. I usually read something and go, okay, that's not quite it, mm-hmm. but there's something there.
Okay.
Can I make it what I feel I need it to be? Mm-hmm. And will they agree with me? right? So my job as an actor at an audition is not just to go in there and play the role, but to show them how I would do it. Okay. Here's a good example. Mm-hmm. So I went in for an HBO series just mm-hmm. recently that I did not get cast in.
Bitches.
But
I said it.
But I put myself on tape and I wanted it. And I had two choices. I could either go in there and give them what I think they wanted.
Are we talking about looking? Because them bitches need to hire you.
No. It wasn't looking. It's a new thing. Mm-hmm. I could either go in there and give them what I thought they wanted, mm-hmm. which I wasn't going to be good at.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I want you to hear that.
No, that's
I was
important.
Not going to be good at mm-hmm. what they think they want.
Right. Mm.
But I was going to be really good at what I thought I could do with it.
Hmm. Hear that, actor?
Which was going to be really good.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Whether or not they wanted it was mm-hmm. not up to me.
Sure.
My job was like, this is how I would do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I do that, if I walk into a meeting like that or an audition like that and do that, then I can walk out of there feeling really good.
That's what's up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if I get the job doing that, then there's no nervousness mm-hmm. on my part feeling like I have to live up to some expectation mm-hmm. that I may or may not be able to fulfill.
Sure.
Because I've already told them what I want to do or okay. how I want to do it. Yeah. And they've said yes.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then I am free
mm-hmm.
to be creative and
sure.
and create.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small adjustment in the way that you do your work, but it's a big one when it comes to in terms of doing the work.
Sure.
And then my friend Jack Plotnick taught me something that I 10 years ago I took a class with him, and he taught me something about auditioning and just our work in general,
mm-hmm.
Especially when you're working in comedy, is tickle yourself. Like if you know mm. if you can tickle yourself,
mm-hmm.
you're gonna tickle the audience.
Funny, that's cute. Mm-hmm. That's a right? simple yeah. little thing too. Yeah.
And if they don't, then you tickled yourself.
You're like, well, I laughed. Bitch.
I laughed. I don't know about you, jokers, but I
can't
was funny.
Tell you how many times on Red Band Society alone, I tickled myself.
That's funny.
I would do stuff that you know just because I was like, well, I think that's funny.
Until the director moved me in another place.
Right. And, then, and they'll tell you, yeah. like, no, don't do that.
And it sounds to me also.
I did a bell kick once and they were like, don't do that.
Stop.
You're like, I've been practicing this bell kick. Shit.
It's too much.
Well, it sounds like also when you're going on auditions, it sounds like you are really thinking in terms of the emotional investment you want to make and putting extra, like you said, when there's something, it's like, is there something I might not be able to fix? Do you want to emotionally invest in that time and energy? Because
yes.
I think it's a lot of hard work
to
create a character.
That's right. So I kind of got off. Yes, I will say no to stuff if mm-hmm. Clearly, you know, it's not real to me and, mm-hmm. you know, the gay character or that this character is not a three-dimensional person and they're not going to allow me to do that mm-hmm. or make him one, then okay, I got to go. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you. Yeah. Let me just clarify, because you have done characters where you've done drag.
Oh yeah.
Now, how do you feel about those? Are you more delicate with those particular characters? Do you feel like you owe that to the transgender community?
I'm more,
or what do you think?
I am more delicate now than I was 10, 15 years ago, which is when I played my two transgender characters, Rent, obviously, and then on Ally McBeal.
Shouldn't he have to sing us out with that Rent song? Shouldn't he?
Oh, no, he should not.
oh, yeah. So, it's in a contract, bitch. It's in a contract.
Oh, okay. I didn't sign anything. Oh, yeah, but no, so all that to say, you know, back then, I was less aware of transgender rights and people. And nowadays, I feel like if you are casting a transgender character, I think you should cast a transgender actor. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I always think that the best actor should play the role. I just feel like there are so many great transgender actors out there that we should... They should have the opportunity yeah. to play those roles. Yes. Now, that being said, Jeffrey Tambor is
Transparent,
killing it.
Oh. Yes,
is killing all of it, all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yes. Mm-hmm. Jared Leto, I felt was fantastic, and I think both of them.
If you commit, we're truly
trying to tell those stories. So this role that I was just talking about for HBO was a drag queen. Okay. It was not transgender. It was drag queen. And I thought about it a lot before I went in or put myself on tape. And so I'm a little more sensitive about it. I couldn't go full drag because I was in the middle of shooting Red Band and I couldn't shave. So I was giving...
Bitch in a wig with a beard.
Okay. Yeah, I was giving bearded lady. I was like Kathy Bates in American Horror Story. But also let's talk about the physical limitations of me playing a trans person right now. You know,
because he's swole, y'all. My man, all kind of muscles and stuff.
But you know, I would have to lose a considerable amount of weight to be feminine. Mm-hmm. You know, in those characters right now. Anyway, so I'm a little careful when it comes to playing transgender or drag queen roles right now. Mm-hmm. I was 115 pounds when I was doing Rent.
And
I was giving you legs for days. And had a blast. Like, you know, the two of my favorite experiences ever. You know, and I feel like I did them justice. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
How long were you doing Rent? How long did you do that for? What's it like being on Broadway? What's
amazing. I was in Rent. Well, it was over the span of 2 years, and I did it for a year and 6 months.
Wow.
Over a span of 2 years. I took 6 months off to do a film with Angela Bassett in the middle. What's it like? It's 8 shows a week. So
your vocals got to be on point.
Your vocals have to be on point, but you energy, physically, you know, people think, but that's it. Oh, this is what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. People think, oh, it's just 2 hours and it's 2 hours of work a day. No. Your day literally has to be built around you being at your physical and vocal peak at 8 o'clock. Wow. Which means you have to wake up at a certain time, you have to eat at a certain time, you have to not eat at a certain time, you have to go to the gym at a certain time, you have to take a nap. You know, I mean, all of these things. Mm-hmm. If you're doing a musical, especially in a role as taxing as Angel was, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you had to be the sunshine of the world for an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. All of that being said, I was 25 years old. So I had a little more energy than I do now.
I can kick my leg, but yeah, I mean,
I had the most amazing time. It was literally a dream come true. Yeah. You know, when I was a kid, my hero was Rita Moreno.
Oh yeah.
And you know, being a young Puerto Rican boy who wanted to be an actor, and so she was everything. I literally played Rita Moreno.
Oh, eight I can shows see that. A week. Yeah. I can
that's
see
who,
that. Yeah.
That's who I was. Yeah. That's who I was playing in my head.
Okay.
You know, when she was dancing, I was dancing like Rita Moreno. I had a little, I put in a little salsa in there. Michael Greif allowed me to infuse a little of that in there. And we changed it up a bit, which was really nice. And I got to make it my own. And what was great about my experience was I didn't go straight into the Broadway show. I created the West Coast premiere. I was part of the West Coast premiere. So I got to go through that rehearsal process and develop the character and do, you know, do previews and experiment. And then we did 2 months, I think, or a month or two in La Jolla before we even came to the Amundsen.
Kind of workshopped it a little bit.
Down in my side of the woods. Diego. Yes. San Diego.
And then was here for a month. And two weeks of that month here at the Amundsen Theater, I was in drag about 24 hours a day because I was doing Alan McBeal during the day.
And then that
they would
Bill
come and
one,
pick me up and shoot me down to the Amundsen Theater so that I could do the show. So, I mean, I was in heels and makeup for 2 weeks. I don't know how you bitches do it. I don't ever have to do that again. Okay. You know, I mean, not all day. My toes.
Do you still have your toes?
I mean, so, you know, but it was fun. It was fun. And I'm glad I was 25 when I did it because I had the energy to do it.
That's what's up. Well, let me ask you one last question before we wrap it up, before our next guest gets here.
Yours.
Let me just ask you about working with writers from an actor's point of view, things that you like and the type of projects you want writers to write.
Yes.
That's
put on like your activist whole head and your actor. You
it's
know,
a
head,
long show. Okay, so the shows. I guess the only way I can answer that question is to tell you the shows that I enjoy.
Okay,
right. Good. What I love to see as a viewer, but also as an actor, what I wish I were on. My shows right now are shows in which each character is on a hero's journey, right? And you see them develop, right? People make such decisions about the shows they like based on the first two episodes, and I'm like, that's where, you know, if it's a good show, that's where that character and that show is beginning. If it's good, I'm enthralled, and I want to know what's happening. But I'm intrigued about where it's going. And a good writer, a good writing team, especially on TV, is going to let me in on this, you know, is putting seeds down, you know, letting me know, breadcrumbs, that this is where we're going in that pilot. So my shows right now are The Good Wife, which if you look at that Juliana Margulies character, to where she is right now, it's almost like she's playing two different characters, yet they're grounded in that person. In like you believe that she has become that person.
Right.
The Affair.
Oh my God. That is so sexy to me.
That show, The Affair, with the fact that you get to see the same story told from two different perspectives.
All right, hey, Madonna.
Okay, we got Madonna playing in the background over here.
Transparent, which you know, people go into thinking it's about the Jeffrey Tambor character, but it's really about that family.
That family dynamic, yeah.
And, you know, that ensemble work. So I'm looking for that. I'm looking for writers and stories told by writers who know that it's not about the first episode, it's about the journey that we're about to go on, right? And that they may not know how exactly we're going to get to the end, but they know where the end is, where they want those characters in that story to go to. And then I want, as an actor, to feel like I have some say as to how we get there, right? That I would never dictate to a writer, but I do feel like we're a team, right? And that if you're as a good actor, I'm going to do my homework and really know who this person is,
sure.
And that you as a writer want to hear my and value my thoughts on who mm-hmm. this person is as well, and that we can come to terms as to how we get him to where you want him to go.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I think it's valuable to writers too, especially when you're coming in and you're just creating a character. A lot of times, even as writers, you think you know where it's going to go, mm-hmm. but sometimes an actor can bring something to it that you never even thought of before.
Absolutely.
And then you can just put that in there and build mm-hmm. on that. Because some of the best shows that I've loved, and when you go back, like if you watch the old DVDs and they talk about the making of mm-hmm. and stuff, you'll see how the writers start off one way, but then as the actor, they start to get to know the actor brings in their own kind of story to mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. It just builds on top of that. Sure. So I think as a writer, you have to be open to what your actors are going to bring you, because sometimes they'll bring you little tidbits that you didn't even think about.
Absolutely.
And you're like, oh my God, mm-hmm. thank God for that. Yeah. And then you can just have a new trajectory in that character. So I'm always a little leery when writers are like, I don't want to hear anything from actors. They should just act and shut the hell up and let me do it.
Right.
It's like,
no respect.
Talking
no
props.
Yeah. And then here's the point that it's in this medium, mm-hmm. it's a collaborative. Yeah.
It's supposed to be.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah,
you
know? I'm excited about Empire too.
Oh yeah.
What I love about Empire is these are broadly mm-hmm. drawn characters, mm-hmm. and
it's freaking hip hop dynasty.
It's like a big time soap opera.
Exactly.
It is.
It's fully that. And Lee will tell you, because I had an opportunity to talk to Lee during the summer, and mm-hmm. that's what he wanted to do. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I love that they are broadly drawn.
Okay.
Right? There's no subtlety here.
No.
Right?
There's but how audaciousness to them. They come in there. Yeah. Yes.
But yet there's something really grounded about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's King Lear, right?
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
And it's if you're going to take on Shakespeare, mm-hmm. You know, it needs, there's a reason why there's now there's a verb, an adjective, Shakespearean.
Sure,
you know what
sure,
I mean? Like
sure.
It's big.
Right.
You know, there's this I love this quote. Toni Morrison was on.
Who's that bitch?
I can't remember if it was on Oprah or somewhere she was being interviewed, and someone asked her from the audience, said, why do you write characters that are bigger than life? Mm-hmm. And she said, my characters aren't bigger than life. My characters are as big as life.
Mm. Damn. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, and I remember thinking as an actor going, bing.
Yes.
Interesting. That's beautiful.
I want to play characters
right.
as big as life.
Big
right.
as life.
Right.
Okay. On that note, that's good shit. Thank you very much, Wilson.
Thank you.
That's what's up.
Thanks for having me.
I've been trying to get him for a while.
I know. Yes.
And I just talked and talked.
Hey, that's what's up.
Because people need to hear these things. I think now, especially, that the narratives are changing. I mean, I know you guys have seen the flack on Twitter about the Oscars and, you know, representation.
We didn't even get to that. I was part of that flack yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he was going in.
Where it was kind of like, and I want to make this clear, because I know me and Hilliard are going to go in on this on another episode, because mm-hmm. I remember I was texting him, like, after mm-hmm. I saw that stuff come out, I was like, bitch, we going to have to look. Mm-hmm. We going to have to set up
people,
time side.
Some of our fans
and
are on Twitter going.
Some of our fans on Twitter's like, I can't wait for y'all to go in.
Y'all need to do an episode.
Right. Yeah. So I'm going to have to bring some Chardonnay, because it was like, I want this to be clear to people, because when we're talking about changing narratives, one of the things that people are getting really sensitive about is they think that when people of color and women are coming at white folk
sure.
and are saying, you know what, we don't like what we're seeing, they mm-hmm. think it's being anti-white, and it's not. It's about being anti-erasure.
Yes.
It's about, America is not, like, literally, mm-hmm. I swear to God, when you look at that Oscar, I was joking with some people, when you look at the Golden Globes, mm-hmm. I swear to God, and I remember I put it on Twitter, I said, the Golden Globes, it actually looks like a Republican convention, but with better tans.
Oh, my God.
With
that's,
better
that's
tans.
That's some shit you would say, Wilson.
With better tans. Really, with better tans, folks. Uh-huh. And it's sad to say that, because a lot of those actors in there, I love them,
okay.
but it's the same actors over and over again. Mm-hmm. And after a while, it's like, I'm getting bored with looking at white folk. And it's nothing personal, because, you know, I love you, boo. I love you. But you know what? There are other stories.
There are.
And what's happening is you're bringing, you know, you're getting kind of mediocre with some of the storytelling mm-hmm. because you're not taking chances by putting in diversity and having variety. Not even diversity, because mm-hmm. I know people get sick and tired of hearing that because they feel like, oh, diversity. We're talking about variety.
I just want to see what the world looks like.
Look, I can't eat vanilla ice cream every day, people. I can't.
Here's the thing is that the film industry is shooting themselves in the foot. They're leaving money on the table.
Oh, come on. You know what?
You look at television. television is doing it.
Right.
They are, they are, there is diversity everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. You look at the shows that are the most successful on TV right now, Empire, mm-hmm. breakout hit, mm-hmm. How to Get Away with Murder, mm-hmm. Scandal. Mm-hmm. We can go on and on, right?
Yes.
Orange is the New Black. They're successful because people want to see themselves on screen.
Absolutely.
People want to see those stories mm-hmm. told. If you make a movie that looks like America, mm-hmm. people
America's
will come,
come.
People are going to see it.
Right.
You know, there was another really great comment I heard on NPR yesterday. The guy said, the problem is that Hollywood is making movies for white people, hoping that everybody else comes.
Right. Mm.
Instead, they need to make movies for everybody.
Yes.
Agreed.
Right? That have everybody in it. Come.
Yes.
One of the tightest scripts this year, and in a film, and that I enjoyed the most, and that looked like America to me, was Top Five.
Yep.
Okay.
Hilarious, mm-hmm. and that script was tight. I don't mm-hmm. know who was working with Chris mm-hmm. Rock, but he got that shit mm-hmm. right.
Uh-huh.
And Miss Rosario Dawson and him were brilliant mm-hmm. to me. And that audience loved it. Mm-hmm. I want to see those movies.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, the audience I went to and I saw with my friend, we went in like, we caught like an afternoon show. The audience was so mixed mm-hmm. with everybody in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like one of those experiences where it's like, man, why don't we have more movies like this that looks like that? They had everybody in that movie. And it was just mm-hmm. like, man, y'all just don't want to make no money.
Yeah.
Y'all just want stale money.
Yeah, definitely.
You don't, you know.
And then, you know, you look at, you know, I enjoyed Into the Woods. I'm a huge Into the Woods musical fan.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed the book. I mean, yeah. I enjoyed the musical. I enjoyed the movie. But I could not help myself watching that movie going, this is set in a made-up world.
True.
And yet we're still not in it.
Okay.
Nobody's there.
Okay.
You're asking your audience to suspend disbelief to the point where there's a giant in the sky.
True.
And a witch on the ground.
Mm-hmm. But ain't no people of color.
And
nobody.
And a wolf walking around. But you don't think the audience is able to suspend disbelief enough.
It is.
That's to have
shit.
A black Cinderella.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like Juno Diaz said, one of his famous quotes.
I love that. Juno Diaz.
I know. One of his famous quotes he's talking about, y'all will read a book. What do you say? Like one third elfish, you mm-hmm. know. But if I put one Spanish word in there, y'all think the whole fucking world's going loose in their damn mind. You know, and it's like, uh-huh. it's that type of like erasure that makes it ridiculous.
Sure.
It's kind of like, look, if you're going to say you're America
mm-hmm.
and you live in a bubble,
mm-hmm.
okay, you cannot like anywhere I go, especially like if I'm going like California, if I go to New York, of mm-hmm. course it's the major metropolitan cities,
sure.
but when you walk around, like I feel uncomfortable when I walk places and I can't have a variety of different type of foods.
Okay.
Like to me, that's America. Like America.
She a foodie, Wilson. She
America,
a foodie.
Right. America, this is America to me. Mm-hmm. When you with your homies and you're sitting there like, what y'all want to eat tonight? We want to do Indian, we want to do Chinese,
Mexican,
we want to do Filipino food because mm-hmm. we can get the lumpia up the street.
Yes.
Do we want to get the tacos? Do we want the like the empanadas? Because mm-hmm. you know, there's different types of Latin American folk. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's like,
sure.
And when I say that, why does that my movies and my mediums do not reflect the foods that I eat that are normal to me? Like, I don't think of Mexican food, Chinese food, or mm-hmm. any type of food as foreign food. To me, that's American food. It's American food.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know?
I just, you know.
And if y'all can eat American food and drink stuff from other countries mm-hmm. and love it and celebrate everybody else's holiday, but you can't put us in the movies.
Sure.
What
but,
the
you
hell
know,
is
going and the other problem is, I know we've gotten way off, but the problem
it's a matter.
Is. The problem is. They think we're stupid.
Yes.
And they're making movies for stupid people. Mm. And we're not stupid. Right?
Yeah.
We're not.
Yeah.
I mean, the American audiences are pretty freaking savvy.
Right.
True.
They have to make it through a day in America.
True.
If you can make it in a day,
you know what I'm saying?
We deserve
so,
better movies.
I think you can make The Wolf in Into the Woods a Mexican, and they're going to be all right with that.
Right.
You know?
Especially if mm-hmm. he can sing a song and do some serious stuff and be fierce about it.
Absolutely.
Oh, shut up.
Absolutely.
We're already suspending disbelief.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've walked into a theater. It's a flat screen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
And we're pretending like we're watching some real people.
And by the way, they've been doing it on Broadway stages
for
years. And those are, that's three dimensional. And people still go in there,
mm-hmm.
open their eyes, and allow themselves to be transported somewhere
else. Right.
Totally.
It's like, how do we make that transition to Hollywood, who seems to think that the rest of, I mean, Hollywood, we've been telling you guys are like 40 years behind. everybody. Music, fashion, food, everything. It's like, how are you going to be like the global? And then the sad thing about it is Hollywood films has such a huge global impact on how people view us in America.
True. Yeah.
And a lot of that stuff, even though we know it's fantasy, that narrative that we put out is so powerful. So if you're putting the same stuff over there, people are going to believe that's what it is. And I hate to tell people, that's not America. I'm so sorry.
Well, but they also, you know, I hate to say this, but some good things came out of that hack at Sony.
Yeah,
we read some of those emails, and we saw Homeboy talk about, you know, Denzel Washington, one of our seminal actors,
right,
who he believes cannot open a film across the ocean because he's black. Right? So that's why they don't put us in their movies. That's not what, that's why we're not starring their
But
films.
That's not us. That, like I said, one of the things is like, oh, they just don't. You guys made that shit up. I think, I can't remember the name. We'll have to talk about it when we talk about go in on it.
Okay.
But there was a particular producer, big time producer, and it was a documentary I saw a couple years ago, and he was talking about why that you can't have, why couldn't Will Smith was doing Hitch? Why couldn't he have had a black female lead? He said, oh, black people don't lead. Black people don't. And I was like, black people don't travel. People don't watch them. They don't want to see black people. I'm like, but you will eat the food, listen to the music, copy how we talk,
how we dress,
copy our hairstyles,
dance to our music.
And not even just black people, okay? People from all, please, do not get me started, okay?
But
you're going to say that we can't open, but we can open up everything else around the fucking globe, but we can't do anything else. So what is really clear, and with all the backlash, now that we got social media, and we can talk back to people all over the world, and put, y'all saw what happened to Exodus, y'all saw what happened to Exodus, okay? You may have to make your little monies and your little DVDs maybe 20 years from now. But the thing is now, people are so vocal about it that they're going to have to listen because people are pretty pissed
now.
And they're going to start using, they're going to weaponize their dollars and start supporting films and not going to movies. You know what?
True.
I'm not going to say, you know what? I'll wait till it come out on DVD. I might just go ahead and get the bootleg, you know? you know what I mean?
It's also a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yes.
Right? So they tell audiences across the ocean that they don't like movies with black or people of color,
and then they don't make them. And then
they won't go.
Yes,
because you know they figure, well, that's probably not a good movie. You know what I mean?
Like exactly. You've already been told that stigma, especially I've heard that about Empire. Some people are like, well, I don't know. You know, it's a black show, and you know, it's Taraji and them. And even though, like, you know, people are thinking about the Hustle and Flow days and all that kind of stuff. A lot
they just have a great chemistry. That's all.
They do. Yeah. But I think a lot of times people still have this thing where, hey, if it's a black product or a non-white product, it might not be as good. It might, you know, because people were like, when we talk about the Sony hack, when they were talking about Kevin Hart.
Yes.
And like, you know, he's not, well, we don't think, I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
The biggest comedian in the world right now.
Everybody goes to see Kevin Hart. Everybody. You know?
And the box office does not lie.
Yeah. But I think the thing is now, and what's wonderful with all this stuff going on is that now it's a brand new day. And I think what happened is too, mentally, we don't believe what they've been telling us now. We don't believe that. And we know better.
We shouldn't.
And because of independent films, because of access to making films so cheaply and quickly now, we know that there's product out there. The key now is how do we get that distribution so everyone can see it globally?
Sure.
Whether it's video on demand, you know, do we got to four wall this bad boy and go to city? What do we have to do? Because it's unacceptable. Unacceptable. And while we're on that gripe, it is unacceptable for y'all not to have anything about Bell. The movie Bell. Okay, at least for
that was your one of your favorites last year, wasn't it? Have you seen that one?
No.
My God.
Tell them about Bell really quick.
Bell,
we gotta run out.
Oh my God.
Bell. B E L L.
B E L L with Gugu Mbatha-Raw.
Oh, I just heard about this. I haven't seen it.
The movie came out in January. She was my Gugu. You were my bookend. Boo boo. I saw you in January when you were giving me my Black Jane Austen type experience, showing that there were black people over there in those days. And at the end of the year, she gave me, you know, she's almost playing like a Rihanna like character and singing and all that kind of stuff. She was fantastic. She don't get, you don't, nothing.
Nothing.
Not even a Golden Globe. Hey, we can, nothing. And y'all love British people.
Yep.
She a black Brit. Black Brits can't do no wrong. Black Brits are putting everybody out of work in America. They are.
Wilson said he going to start talking with a Cockney accent.
You know what?
And
I'm going to need to do a little homework on that.
No, I mean.
We can do better.
But I think being vocal about it pushes them to do better.
It should.
I hope.
I mean, hey.
I'm betting on it.
Oh, hey. Yeah. So on that note, thanks a lot, Wilson. Thank you. We appreciate it. That's Wilson Cruz, y'all.
Thank you so much for coming.
You know, support the man. He's out there making it happen. So what's next for you?
I don't know.
Yeah? Because you said you're getting your body ready for some shit.
Well, because I'm up for a part that I need to be ready for. Mm-hmm. So I'm waiting to hear. It's pilot season, so I'm up for a
We need to get you on something again. Scene still in motherfucking looking.
I'm excited about this, so if it happens, it'd be great.
All right.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be so awesome.
Yes.
Because I need to see more of you in my life.
Yeah, and I got bills to pay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm talking to producers about my... I don't know if you didn't even know. I wrote the story of Sylvester.
No, I did not. Yeah. So,
I'm talking to some producers about shooting a sizzle, so I might have something for you.
Okay.
Let's see if they invest, because I want some money.
Can we
do
please get that Sylvester movie?
I'm trying, girl. I'm trying.
Are you kidding me? That was like the part of the soundtrack of my life.
I know.
He was like the segue in making me understand that there are other people and other voices, and you can be fabulous. I mean, come on.
You know who's been wanting to play that part for as long as I've known him is Billy Porter.
Yeah, and trust me, I thought of Billy. I think Billy's too old now. That's my only concern, because I want somebody to play him from a certain age up until he goes. Okay. It's my only concern. But there are other roles.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I just, you know, that's when I think of it.
Have you seen the show that they did?
I did not with Anthony.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know it's going to be in San Francisco if it's not there now. Mm-hmm. But
it wasn't here, was it?
Not yet.
No, okay, because I was in Atlanta, so I didn't know if it was here when I was gone. Mm-hmm. No, I want to see it.
But I'll let you know.
Make it happen.
Okay. See. Yeah.
I'm supposed to meet with them next week. So
make it happen.
All right. Prayers up.
Okay. Prayer warriors in the world. Let's get him prayed up. Bring Sylvester, the biopic, to life.
Yes. Exactly. I mean, that's a story. You want to talk about, first of all, that is rich with opportunity, you know, and talk about diversity.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
Can I just be in the audience? If you do any scenes.
Actually, I might have somebody where they go, there you go.
Yeah, or anything like when they're doing anything with the Cockettes or anything like that in the audience, and you just,
you'd be perfect in the Cockettes.
I'd just be in the audience. Oh, God, don't make me be. No, I'd be messing up. I'd be too nervous. I'd be like, oh, Sylvester's going to come and get me in my dreams. I can't mess this up, you know. Oh, hallelujah for Sylvester. But seriously, he's one of those characters that. Just in my life, like I just remember my soundtrack and life and him opening up doors for just getting other people and realizing, especially for gay people that I know in my family and everything like that. Oh my God, Sylvester is like huge.
Yeah, let's get Sylvester done, and then maybe we can get Prince done. Because I know somebody who should play that.
Prince would ever give anybody the rights to his story,
You know, I can be very charming.
Seeing Stella.
I think he's fascinating.
He's totally fascinating.
So people are always like, so if you had to play a real life individual, who would it be? And I'd be like, well, Prince.
Yes.
I mean, use all my gifts. Right. Come on. Now.
I go, wait a minute. But at 41, you still got the skills. You got the moves.
Please.
You got it.
You stay at 41. Look, bitch.
He's old.
The only problem is we're gonna have to hire people that are like 6'9"
Yes,
next
to make it look like you're smaller.
I'm just letting y'all know right now. Wilson's still looking. He's 20. Okay,
you know, with a little light beard over there.
You know, I mean, 30
got
tops.
Three or four gray hairs. You like me with your little beard. He got three little gray hairs sticking out.
A little bit, but trust me, he could play it. Like, oh my God, wouldn't that be amazing? I can bring out all my print stuff.
Totally.
And the fan.
Can we get your little afro out there? Can
please.
We
oh my God.
Charles Gregory in Atlanta will do our hair. Don't worry. You set it up. Funny.
Awesome.
So, Lizzie Wilson, where can people find you at? Are you on Twitter?
WCruz73 on Twitter and on Instagram. And I have a fan page on Facebook, Wilson Cruz.
That's what's up.
Nice.
Yes.
Cool. And he'd be saying some shit on Facebook.
Oh my God.
I didn't even know you were on Facebook.
Because a lot of times, people who are actors, they keep their stuff really quiet and they have like their PR people and they really don't want to, they're trying to work and they don't want to be controversial. But I'm like, those are the people I love. You say what you feel.
Yeah. And I wrote something about the whole Oscar thing yesterday, and I put it on my fan page, and somebody reposted and said, oh wow, even Wilson Cruz is saying something. I'm like, well, you haven't been paying attention.
You don't know me.
You can't shut her up.
That's what's up. Lisa, where you at?
You can follow me on Twitter. I know, mm-hmm. I'm positive this year. It's like, cool. I want you to follow me.
She's,
I don't,
she's tell people please. They can't follow
me. I said tell people don't follow me on Twitter because as we know, mm-hmm. I talk about all kinds of stuff and I'm not always rainbows and sunshine and all kinds of stuff. I get into some real stuff and yeah. some people think, oh, it's just screenwriting. Mm-hmm. And then I come out with something like, oh, I didn't know she was mm-hmm. so radical and she's a little too black. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A little mm-hmm. too much. But no, you know what? I'm open to it. Just know that I talk about all kinds. Like you said, I look at myself as an artist activist. You know, I'm one of those. I'm a professional agitator. Yeah. That's my job. That's yeah. what I'm put here to do. Once mm-hmm. I've embraced that,
you good at it, bitch.
Oh, yeah, I'm doing what I do. Yeah. You can also find me at Bitchflix. I do write feminist film criticism. Mm-hmm. My latest piece is about Paolo Malo. And thank you to all the people who's been retweeting that.
It's called, it's been getting retweeted like a motherfucker.
It's Paolo Malo, which is bad hair in Spanish. Mm-hmm. And my piece is called Paolo Malo, Coding Blackness and Genderqueer Identity.
Mm-hmm. Paolo Malo.
Paolo Malo. And yes. and please go, if you get a chance to see that movie, please see it. It's mm-hmm. an important film. It's important, especially for our young people out there mm-hmm. who are trying to create identities. Mm-hmm. And we need to create safe spaces for them to be who they need to be mm-hmm. because those that's our future. Mm-hmm. And if you are crushing people because you're whatever your thing is, whatever you think normal is, mm-hmm. you are wrong.
Exactly,
okay,
exactly.
And I'm gonna let you know about it. So hook me up and check me out at Bitchflix and on Twitter.
I'm following you right now.
Follow me right now and find out some more
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I'm your host, Hilliard Guest. And forgive me, y'all. Y'all can hear this music in the background. I hear in my office and the neighbor next door thinking he's gonna turn
yeah,
the music
once
on.
Yeah, once we get done with this, we gonna have to go walk across
okay,
the way
we might
and
have to
a little
step over there and be like, excuse me.
Can I talk? Can I talk to you? About, he was jamming when he had Madonna.
I know.
Okay.
Now he's just tripping.
Now
he got the radio playing,
okay,
all kind
like,
of shit.
Knock. Can I talk to you for a second?
So, for those of y'all listening, forgive me if y'all hear some crazy ass background music, but you know what? We got it in anyway.
For sure.
So, thank you very much, Gary, for hanging in with us today. And thank you, Lisa, for popping in. We're glad you showed up because
I was not gonna miss Wilson Cruz. Like I was about, like literally, I was like, I may have to quit my job for a couple of days.
No, I won't have that. I'll just
and be like, I gotta see him just to say thank you, Wilson, just for all your work. And you don't realize how much you mean to so many young people. Mm-hmm. Like literally, when that first show came out. You don't know how many babies you helped.
That's what's up.
So thank you so much.
Well, they mean the world to me. They do. Mm-hmm. You know, they. Whatever it is that I mean to them, they mean tenfold to me. Mm-hmm. And that's the truth.
That's the truth.
That's what's up. Get it. Got my girl over here bawling. Okay,
I know,
look.
Like, oh.
She's trying to get me to cry. Gary over there trying to cry.
So it means so much.
Our little mascot, Abby, trying to cry. Look. So anyway, that's how we do it mm-hmm. on the Rant Room. We appreciate it. And you guys can follow me on Twitter at Hilliard Guest. Or Screenwriters RR, please follow us. You see, Wilson ain't writing that shit there now. You see what I'm talking about? You see what I'm talking about? You see the abuse that I get? My own cousin, don't even write shit down. Look.
Your family always treats you the worst.
Okay. Oh my God.
Wait, I thought I had you on here already.
Like, I thought I had it down.
What happened was.
I know, look.
Looking at
the phone had fell in the garbage.
Oh, here we go.
So, anyway, I'm silly.
Wait, what was it?
It's at Hilliard Guess. Or you can follow us at Screenwriters RR, because the Rant Room was too long for the white folks. You know how they do us. So.
I thought I was following you, but I was not.
And if you guys want to email, okay, bitch.
I am now.
I know where you live. So if you guys want to email us or anything, you know, hit us up, any questions or whatever, ScreenwritersRantRoom@gmail.com. And again, thank you, Gary. Appreciate it coming through. And Wilson, Lisa.
Yep.
That's what's up. Great
That's
episode.
Up.
This was a great one. We had fun.
We had fun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
thank
we
you
had
for
fun.
Me. I was
doubt.
Nervous.
Don't be nervous. It's just us.
There ain't too many shows. We could just lay out, just be yourself, huh?
Yeah, you just miss the days when I usually have my Patron or my liquor hanging up in here. When it's one of them days, like, you know what? I need a drink because we need to talk about some stuff.
I will come back for
okay,
that.
Okay, so we got to talk about some stuff.
Yeah,
just drinking. That's what's up.
I have been known to throw back you. You know, Patron, my people.
Okay.
That's what's up. So special shout out to a couple of countries for following us. Dude, Wilson, we are all over the place right now.
I'm glad you didn't tell me that before.
I see the bitch didn't read my email. I sent them. Look. Anyway, we are in Canada. Thank you, guys. Australia, huge numbers over there. England, one of our biggest. Brazil is growing.
Way
it's
back.
Crazy.
Brazil. I love Brazil.
Yeah, South America, Mexico. Who else? Oh, freaking South Africa is big. And a lot of y'all motherfuckers. Thank you. They're like, he didn't even read it. He didn't write this shit down. No, motherfucker. I just thought about it.
And those unnamed people, countries
yes,
that we might
all
miss.
The rest
Thank
of y'all.
You so much for listening.
Yeah. And some of the top cities, you know, of course, LA, New York, Chicago, San Francisco, of course, where I'm from, you know. Mm-hmm. Y'all motherfuckers better step up, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. People over there. Florida is crazy. Actually, you know, one of our biggest states is Scottsdale. I'm shocked.
Arizona.
In Arizona.
There are stories I need
to
tell.
Yeah, the white folks over there.
Mm-hmm. They need to tell
Thank
their stories too.
That's what's up. Mm-hmm. You know, y'all can handle all this craziness.
Yes, tell.
They probably needed the most.
You know what? Yeah. Help make them better,
exactly.
Right? Because we want to hear your stories too.
Absolutely.
You know?
Desert in more ways than one.
Yes.
Well, I'm there every 3 months. My partner's from there.
No,
so.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, so they heard I was in town and mm-hmm. shit, you know. So they just started listening to the show.
Okay, no.
So again, thank you guys. We appreciate it. To everybody joining, we're going to say 1,015. Actually, for you, we're going to say 2,015.
All right.
For the sake of an argument.
All right.
Because he said earlier, why don't we say 2,015?
Okay, all right. For Wilson, we will do it.
Exactly. So y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. On the show, we, babe, I'm forgetting my own fucking lines.
Wow.
Okay, here we go. On a Rant Room, we keep it street, uh-huh. we keep it opinionated, what? And we keep it what?
2015.
All right, peace, y'all.
Everyone got one. What's your opinion? This is the Rant Room. Tongues won't be bitten. Ain't no rules, just spill it. And anybody can get it. No limit. We here to kill it. You tuning into the thrillers. And no, ain't no stopping. Any topic, even the random. I hope that you're ready. We entering in the zone soon. We on a grown shit. Welcome to the Rant Room.